He thought that works of art must be preserved. He felt that they needed to be loved. This is why he hated being called an art thief. And of course, I asked him, well, if you don't want to be called an art thief, what would you like to be called, Stefan? And he said to me in French, he said, oh, I would like to be called a collector with an unorthodox acquisition style.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with Michael Finkel, author of The Art Thief, a true story of love, crime, and a dangerous obsession. This is a true crime narrative that centers Stefan Breitweiser, who carried out more than 200 heists over nearly 8 years in museums and cathedrals all over Europe, and along with his girlfriend, who worked as his lookout, stole more than 300 objects. Unlike most thieves, Breitweiser never stole for money. Instead, he displayed all his treasures in a pair of secret rooms where he could admire them to his heart's content. The Art Thief has been called a riveting story of art, crime, love, and an insatiable hunger to possess beauty at any cost. Michael Finkel is the best-selling author of The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit, and True Story, Murder, Memoir, Mea Culpa. He lives with his family in northern Utah. Mike, thanks for joining me today. Welcome to The Right Question.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Lauren.
Mike, who is Stefan Breitweiser?
Stefan Breitweiser is an object of my, or a person of my, extreme fascination for three reasons. First of all, he's an art thief, as the book title subtly implies. Stefan Breitweiser stole from more museums than anyone in history. And I feel like I can say that with some authority because I spent the entire COVID pandemic reading about art crime. And outside of war and maybe the Nazis, outside of an army, I don't think anyone has really stolen from more than like a dozen or two museums. And Stefan Breitweiser stole from 201 museums. Incredible number. He was born in 1971. So this isn't something deeply historical. Stefan Breitweiser is alive. I can't say well, but alive and still willing to talk to me. But it wasn't actually the number of thefts that really intrigued me. I was interested in his thieving style. Breitweiser stole during the day, opening hours, often with guards and other tourists in the room. He was accompanied by his girlfriend, Anne Catherine Kleinklaus, who served as his lookout. So he had these nonviolent, Breitweiser called it invisible style sort of crimes. If you're thinking about movies where there's always, you know, smoke bombs and somehow somebody is always descending through a skylight and there's, you know, Uzis, this is not what Breitweiser believed. Breitweiser believed that the perfect crime was one that nobody knew was taking place, except, of course, the thieves. But even this was not the reason that I was tipped into the realm of obsession with Stefan Breitweiser. It was what he did with the art. And maybe if you're thinking about art thieves, you might be thinking about something like Ocean's 11 or the Thomas Crown Affair, or even like James Bond movies or something. The art thieves in those films are always some sort of aesthete or collector. Those are fictitious art thieves, real art thieves, 99.99% of them steal for money. They're just thieves that want to get money, and paintings seem to be easy to grab because they're right there on the wall. Stefan Breitweiser stole an approximately $2 billion worth of art and just hung them in his bedroom for he and his girlfriend, Anne Catherine Kleinklaus, his accomplice, to admire. And that combination of three things, the sheer quantity, the style, and the reason, that's journalistic catnip, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, your book is titled The Art Thief. You are calling Breitweiser an art thief, but he himself sort of resisted that moniker. And it's for that very reason that you just stated. I think that that is why, right? Like, this was not a monetary endeavor for him. He was solely interested in aesthetics. Will you talk a little bit more about that tension, especially perhaps in your your research process and your interview process with him, because I think he was kind of a complicated character, or he is, in that he's resisting a lot of sort of the obvious notions of his own case.
Right. So Stefan Breyweiser, who, by the way, is French. He's from the Alsace region of France, which is the part of France in the northeast where Switzerland, Germany, and France all meet. So we spoke to each other in French, but one of the first things he said to me, by the way, it took me, 5 years of sort of slight effort to finally agree to let him agree to an interview with me. But once we did finally sit down and have an interview, yeah, one of the first things he said to me was that he didn't like being called an art thief. And I found that to be a funny statement, because he was fully open. The statute of limitations for most of his crimes has expired. So he was very open about all 201 thefts and went through them point by point, but didn't like being called an art thief. And I said, of course, well, why don't you like being called an art thief? And he said, you know, name an art thief. And of course, I went with the fictitious ones. He said, those are fictitious. He said to me, name a real art crime. And the first one that popped into my head is probably the same as your listeners, is the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, 1990 in Boston. Two men broke in at night and stole about $500 million worth of paintings, which, by the way, have never been recovered. And as soon as I said Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, Breitweiser, who is not only an extraordinarily accomplished art thief, but also an autodidact, he also read books and books and books on art history and art crime, knows everything about that. It was an impressive, if Breitweiser wasn't an art thief, I like to call him that. We'll get into what he likes to call himself. If he wasn't that person, he might have made a fine art professor, because he was very entertaining when he spoke to me. Anyway, he said, yeah, those Isabella Stewart Gardner, those two guys broke in at night. They attacked the night guards, already violent, which Breitweiser doesn't like, and bound the guards with duct tape and handcuffed them to pipes in the basement. Already not Breitweiser style, but this isn't really why he hates being called an art thief. It's what the Gardner thieves did next. They went to the most magnificent work in the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, a Rembrandt seascape, and one of the two guys stuck a knife into the canvas and went all along the outside of the frame, the inside of the frame actually, and ripped it, basically cut it roughly from this Rembrandt painting from its frame, basically harmed the painting. If these paintings are ever found, they will never be whole. And Breitweiser was the absolute worst. To damage a work of art, he thought that works of art must be preserved. We can get into this later. He felt that they needed to be loved. And this is why he hated being called an art thief. And of course, I asked him, well, if you don't want to be called an art thief, what would you like to be called, Stefan? And he said to me in French, he said, oh, I would like to be called a collector with an unorthodox acquisition style. So, I don't know if I called him a collector to his face, but that's what he wanted to be called.
And Mike, do you have a copy of your book with you? Because there's a passage that I'd love to follow this. Yes, great. I mentioned a contradiction, and it's the way in which Breitweiser contextualizes what he's doing in the history of art. And I thought it might be a good way or a good transition from what we've been talking about here.
The story of art, Breitweiser says, is a story of stealing. Egyptian papyri from the early written age decried the menace of tomb raiders. The Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar II in 586 BC hauled off from Jerusalem the Ark of the Covenant. The Persians plundered the Babylonians. The Greeks raided the Persians. The Romans robbed the Greeks. The Vandals binged on the riches of Rome. Francisco Pizarro and Hernan Cortez in the early 16th century ravaged the Inca and Aztec. Queen Christiana of Sweden seized 1,000 paintings from Prague in 1648 and paid her generals in artwork. Napoleon stole to endow the Louvre and Stalin to stock the Hermitage. Hitler, an aspiring watercolorist who was twice rejected by Vienna's Academy of Fine Arts, planned a museum in his hometown of Linz, Austria, that would house every important work in the world. The foremost items in the British Museum, the first National Gallery to open in 1759 during the Age of Enlightenment, include the Benin bronzes seized from Nigeria, the Rosetta Stone smuggled out of Egypt, and the Elgin marbles chipped off the Parthenon in Greece. Art dealers and auction houses are the worst, says Breitweiser. Every one of them lower than dirt. The historian Pliny the Elder in the first century AD described the dishonest tactics of art vendors in Imperial Rome. And in September 2000, Christie's and Sotheby's auction houses were levied $512 million in fines for cheating buyers and sellers in a price-fixing scheme. Shady people have been peddling bright colors for 2,000 years. Each pilfered work represents another reason he steals, Breitweiser says, and everyone in the art world is a thief in some way. If he doesn't get what he wants, he expects others will. Some grab works by wiring cash to a dealer. He acquires pieces with a Swiss Army knife. At the very least, he's a formidable rogue in the art world's eternal den of iniquity. And perhaps when all is said and done, this is his dream. He will be written into the story of art as a hero.
He will be written into the story of art as a hero. Like I will say probably throughout our interview, he is a complex person, and what he is doing is really complex, and how you've written about him, there are so many nuances to what he's doing. And I'm just wondering how you considered those nuances during the process of researching and writing this book.
So I think that when I'm seeking a topic for a book that's going to hold someone's attention, for not just a little article or, you know, something that's going to be you're spending 10 minutes with, but several hours of a reader's time. First of all, it has to be complex. It has to be not obvious in terms of morality. I look for people that you can keep sort of turning them, and there's another facet and another facet and another facet. Even as I mentioned earlier, these three things, the number of crimes, the way he stole it, and his just like idea of keeping things for its beauty unto itself, just the three small facts that define Breitweiser, just that itself is, I think I can spend 20 minutes kind of going back and forth. Well, that's kind of disgusting. No, I kind of respect that. So right from the beginning of my writing process, I was not sure how I felt about these crimes. I mean, I love museums. They're like one of the great social goods of the world. Modern society seems fraught with problems, but museums are not one of the problems. In fact, they're one of the, you know, the most fantastic things that, you know, someone that doesn't have $1 billion can go and see some of the most amazing and beautiful works of art. And so there's no question that Breitweiser was, if everyone behaved like him, there would be no more museums. We would all be out of luck. So he's a cancer on society. So I dislike that part. Anyway, I'm an inefficient writer. From the first time I wrote a note to Breitweiser requesting an interview to the day the book came out was 11 years. And I started out being unsure how I feel about Breitweiser. And I'm kind of happy to report that I'm ending up not sure how I feel about Breitweiser. Again, you can ask me in 20 minutes and I might have a different sort of idea. It does range from begrudging, I'm going to say respect, but some sort of admiration, even like a tiny tinge of jealousy. I would like to have a couple of $1 billion on my walls, even just for like one day. How amazing would that feel? And really utter disgust. And yeah, I can't decide how I feel about him. And I like that when I write, that's the kind of book that I like to read, where I'm not sure how I feel about the main character. The morality, the moral questions kind of run deep, and he raises a lot of questions. Even the piece, the excerpt you just had me read aloud was basically saying, not incorrectly, that the art world is filled with thieves. That doesn't mean you should have some more, but it is an interesting, he's not wrong. Breitweiser's not wrong in that every museum, if really every piece of artwork in every museum was going to go back to where it should be, there would be a lot of blank spots on the walls of museums all around the world. And that is also a large topic. But I like to write it's for readers to decide whether the book is any good, but I tried to write the book by laying out everything I knew about Breitweiser concisely, and let the reader decide at the end how he or she feels about Breitweiser. I always feel like the readers are sort of the jury, and I'm trying to present all the facts, both good and bad. I'm both the prosecution and the defense. And I don't really like when writers try and tell you how to feel. And I hope that I haven't done that. I hope I've just like, this is everything he did, from the morally bereft to the utterly fascinating. And you tell me whether this guy deserves to spend the rest of his life in jail or perhaps be considered, as he wished, written into the history of art as a hero. Although I might add, as I was reading, my little self-editor was tick, tick, ticking in my head, maybe written into the history of art as an anti-hero.
You're listening to A Conversation with Michael Finkel. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Montana Book Company, located in downtown Helena since 1978, offering new books for all ages, vinyl records, and community activism. Delivery in Helena and shipping is available online at mtbookco.com. This book is the story of so many of these thefts, and you go into great detail about a number of them, and there's so much tension in each of those stories. Like, oh my gosh, he is stealing this right in front of these guards, these people, these other patrons of the museum. You know, there's witnesses there. And you say, and he and Catherine kind of realized pretty quickly into their tenure as thieves that the thing to do is to do what people don't expect of you. So instead of planning a heist, planning these thefts, they don't plan at all. They go in and they don't know specifically, usually, which piece of art they're looking for or they want to take. It's just a momentary decision. As you said, there's people around. I mean, it's terrifying and so fascinating at the same time.
Yeah, while you were talking, I was just thinking, like, you know, Breitbart had this theory, correct, that, you know, something that a thief would not do is exactly what a thief should consider doing. For example, more than once after Breitweiser and Anne-Catherine, his girlfriend, stole something, they went to the museum cafe to eat lunch with the stolen work on their body. Now, that seems completely nuts. And I would never have the chutzpah to do something like that. But if you imagine this, like when something's stolen from an art museum, it's very often noticed within minutes, because there's a blank spot on the wall. I mean, there's an empty frame suddenly in a gallery, or a display case top that's just like moved over to the side. I mean, these things often are noticed quickly, but think about police rushing into a museum. I think the last person that the police are going to run up to is someone casually, you know, sipping some soup in the cafe. That's not going to be an art thief, right? I mean, there's just no way that they're going to be casually eating, a baguette. And so that's, for Breitweiser, like being a step ahead of often me and often the authorities, was like, oh yeah, that's exactly the reason why we should be, you know, sipping soup and eating baguette, because that's not what a thief would ever do. And so there they are, like in a museum with their stolen stuff, you know, in Anne-Catherine's purse and something, you know, at the small of Breitweiser's back while they're eating lunch, and the police just go running right on by. Now, I could never have the sang-froid, the cold-bloodedness to do that, but I do love that idea of subverting all expectations, and just, it's like these simple and yet ingenious acts of criminality that, I mean, again, I disapprove, but I am impressed.
Yeah. So you interview Breitweiser over the course of many years. You go and see him in France. You are in the spaces that he has stolen from. I mean, you outline in the book's end pages many of the sources that you look to for this book, again, including Breitweiser himself. But you also mentioned this great love of his, Anne-Catherine. And she is someone who has not given extensive interviews. And I'm really curious about the silences in this book. Anne-Catherine has remained silent about it. His mother has been very tight-lipped about her knowledge of or complicity in these thefts. For listeners, he kept all of these pieces of art in the attic of his mother's house. And whether or not you believe her when she said she had no idea, that's kind of up to you. But yeah, Mike, will you talk a little bit about the silences, the refusal to talk, silences in museum, complicity? Will you talk about the silence that you see kind of manifesting itself in this book?
Both Breitweiser's mother and Breitweiser's girlfriend have never spoken to the media in the 20 years that since the thefts first started to today. And they did not speak with me, although Breitweiser's mother had read one of my previous books in French translation and gave permission. His mother holds a lot of power over her only child, her son, the art thief, and said, oh, this journalist seems okay. You can speak to him. So if it wasn't for the mother's tacit permission to giving her son permission to speak with me, I don't think any of this would happen. And Catherine, not to give too much away, the ending is, I think, this is basically an Icarus story. Breitweiser and his girlfriend fly way too close to the sun. Everything melts and their crash. I think the crash is almost as extraordinary and surprising and historically unprecedented as the rise. We'll leave some of that out, but I think it's not giving away too much to say that Anne Catherine, unlike Breitweiser, the art thief, basically gets away with all the crimes, which is almost unbelievable. She's like a Houdini-esque in her ability to escape. And by opening her mouth to a journalist, she would be in a terrible position. She would either have to completely lie to me provably or expose herself to, you know, potential punishment for perjury. So she has maintained her silence, has not committed a crime since their Breitweiser and Anne Catherine's relationship ended, also not giving away too much. But yeah, as you mentioned before, there is lacuna, silence, gaps. You're almost thinking of literally the previous book about the hermit, where this guy lived in absolute silence for 27 years, Chris Knight, the subject of The Stranger in the Woods, my previous book. And the entire interview process with Chris Knight was also about silences. In fact, there were sometimes like literal silences like that, but like 5 minutes. That was like 2 seconds and I got all nervous, like dead air for someone is like crazy. We should, like, a minute of silence would freak everyone out. People would like tapping their radios. The only thing I have to say about that is, since I search for as close to the truth as possible, is that no true story in life really can be completely known. And basically I'm saying you have to live, readers and me as the writer and a somewhat obsessive researcher has to learn to live with what you're saying silence is, I'm gonna say is like gaps in the record, or, you know, you can't get everyone's perspective. And I find the silences both with the hermit and with the art thief's girlfriend, Anne Catherine, and his mother, I find those silences sort of like deliciously frustrating. Like you never can get everything. And I also don't like to pretend to the readers that, you know, this is, I would love to hear what Anne Catherine had to say, but I don't know if it would be trustworthy. I will say that I was able to, Anne Catherine and Breitweiser's mother, Marie Stengel, gave depositions to the police, appeared in court, and all these are accessible. I have plenty of interrogations under oath and testimony given under oath. Plus, I spoke to many people who knew both women, and so I feel like I got at least a good picture of the two. But yeah,
and I feel like these silences, they lend an air of further mystery to what is already this very bizarre case, and so I think that there's certainly something, as a writer, you might want to lean into that too. I'm wondering if there's anything that you want our listeners to know that we haven't talked about. I wanted to give you a little space for that now.
Two things come to mind. First of all, Breitweiser, how did he even enter a museum? He and Anne Catherine would just go to the front desk and buy a ticket in cash. Don't put your credit card down, and walk in. So they entered museums just like we all do. And then Breitweiser's only thieving tool was a Swiss Army knife. And he often liked to go to museums in cooler weather so he could wear a long jacket. And he would use this Swiss Army knife. I mentioned how the Isabella Stewart Gardner criminals stuck a knife in a canvas. Breitweiser, who, by the way, worked at a frame shop ostensibly to learn how frames are put on paintings, but really to learn how you could take frames off. And he also worked as a security guard after finishing high school in a museum to learn how museum security systems work, and also on a psychological level. And Breitwiser's crimes almost entirely worked on a psychological level. He realized that guards do not, after a couple of days on the job, you really don't pay attention to the artwork. It just fades into the background. And so you can get away with crazy crimes that you wouldn't expect because humans we have gaps. We just can't concentrate all the time. And also Breitwiser, just like little tiny important things, almost always stole during lunchtime. Why did Breitwiser steal during lunchtime? Because most museums will run about half their guards get to take lunch break while the other half are patrolling, and then they'll switch. And so for that hour, there's like half the number of guards in a museum, which is pretty intelligent and also quite simple. So Breitwiser would remove a frame he would take a painting off the wall. He would turn it upside down and remove the nails or the ribbons or the brads, as they called them, and steal. And then he would have a raw painting, which he said to me in French must be treated like a newborn baby very carefully. And then he would bring them back to his attic, and he would protect everything from dust and heat and direct sunlight. That's one thing. And then he would often to break into display cases, because he stole more than just paintings. He also stole a lot of sculptures and other objects. He would use what he called the silicon slice. He would take out his Swiss Army knife and cut open the seals that hold the panels of a display case together. And he'd be able to open it up and pull something out, as opposed to picking a very difficult to pick lock. And he would put it at the small of his back and put his jacket over it and like walk out a museum, just walk out the entrance. And you would think, how could you just not notice that? He reminded me a lot of a street magician, Breitwiser, in his ability to do something right from under your nose. And since Breitwiser is somewhat well known in the Alsace region of France and it was like recognized on the street, we did many of our interviews in tiny little European hotel rooms that I would rent, and he would sit. There would often only be one chair in the room, and I often would sit on the luggage rack, and we'd have this tiny little desk between us. And I like to keep my laptop on the desk, because Breitwiser would often make references to other criminals or to other painters, obscure names that I was unfamiliar with, and I like to look them up just to see. But when we were talking, I would just close the computer and leave it on the desk between us. And I say, you know, how is it that you're able to, I don't understand how you're able to steal with a guard in a room. That just, please explain that to me. And Breitwiser stopped the interview and he said, well, did you see what I just did? Look around. And I'm like looking around I'm talking about a hotel room that's the size of a walk-in closet. I'm like looking around and nothing seems out of place. I'm like, I didn't see what you did. And he stands up and he turns around, and at the small of his back is my laptop computer. And I had lowered my eyes for a couple of seconds.
That was Michael Finkel, author of The Art Thief, a true story of love, crime, and a dangerous obsession. Out now from Penguin Random House. Look for more information about Mike at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You've been listening to The Right Question. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell, and our music was written and recorded by John Floridis. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.